This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello and welcome to Live and Learn on the Bigger Picture with me, Lim Soo Ann. Poetry has been around for thousands of years in its various forms and languages. It can be found in every culture, in almost every continent, and it has the power to resonate with people, to affect change in some cases. So what is it that makes poetry a form of expression that, you know, touches people in that very special way, but also in some cases intimidating to others, right? So that's what we want to discuss to commemorate World Poetry Day, which is celebrated every year on the 21st of March. So that was yesterday. And today, to discuss our topic, I'm joined by poet educator Sheena Barudin to talk about all things poetry. Thank you so much for joining me today, Sheena.
Thank you so much for having me.
To you, what makes a poem? How do you define poetry?
Okay, so I guess, you know, one of the way that we can sort of start this conversation is to acknowledge the fact that in order for us to answer the question, what makes a poem, right? Mm-hmm. Most of the time, we will tend to go and look for a definition of what it is. Mm-hmm. What is the definition of poem? So this is a thing. A poem has, for the longest of time, escaped a standard definition. I mean, even poets themselves, they tend to struggle when it comes to defining what it is. And I feel that a lot of times when we think of what a poetry is, number one, that it looks sort of different from our day-to-day communication, written or spoken. And also there tends to be a focus or an emphasis on sensorial experience. So we have a lot of images in there, and it also has a musical quality to it. Lyrical as well, so it's rhythm as well. So I guess in that sense, what makes a poem? Well, number one, there is an emphasis on the intricacies of language, and it's also pretty at the same time. I think that's a good start, right?
It is. I think it's the sort of thing that you, like you say, right? You can't put a fixed definition on it. And I think a lot of people, when you read poems, you realize that no one of them is ever really like the same, unless you look at very specific things. Like if we look in the Malay language, then you say, okay, pantun has a specific rhythm to it. But if you look at saja or puisi, for example, then you don't see as much of a pattern there. It's very interesting to look at. Then what sets poetry apart from other forms of storytelling?
Oh, wow. Oh, ooh. Okay, I'm loving this question, by the way. I would say that when we look at storytelling as we know it, mm-hmm. it tends to be characters in the story. It tends to be sort of, you know, the usual narrative structure, beginning, middle, and ending. Mm-hmm. But when you look at poetry, and I'm referring to more of that traditional idea of poetry, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Which is very different from spoken word poetry, but that, because that is sort of a version of storytelling on its own. But conventional poetry would be an emphasis on the moment rather than a story. You're looking at slices of life. And yeah, it's basically focusing on a single moment and really being in the present.
Why is poetry important to people, to communities, or to cultures even?
Wow. I guess, you know, the same question can be posed to, let's just say, why do we need music? Mm-hmm. You know, why do we need music? Why do we need dance? The same thing goes as well. Why do we need poetry? And I think it's because this is, again, I'm speaking from the way that I approach poetry as well. It's just that we tend to find ways to address things around us creatively. And when we do that creatively, we do have to find a way to do it in the best way possible, right? And for me, that is why poetry is important, especially when you experience something that you find out the way that you tend to speak prior to this no longer suffice. So how else do you express yourself? Well, you do it, you know, depending on whatever forms, art forms that you are most comfortable with or resonate with you the best.
So you're a poet yourself, Sheena. You do spoken word poetry. What drew you to that and what inspires your work?
Okay, right. So I tend to say this a lot back then when we could still perform on stage.
Before COVID?
Before COVID, right? Every time when I go on stage, I have to let everybody know, because it actually comforts me to a certain point, that number one, I am an introvert and I have stage fright. Mm-hmm. And that was also the reason why I decided to sort of shift from just writing poetry to writing poetry for performance. I wanted to know that whatever that I was going through, that I was not alone, and I want to communicate and also receive the responses, and felt less alone than before. So that was what something that, you know, that was the thing that got me performing poetry. But even before that, I've been writing poetry for quite a while. And why I wanted to do that is because, again, once again, there are just certain experiences that really forced you to sit down and really to reflect on it and find a way to put it in the best way possible. That's how I approach it.
Hmm. And I guess if we look on the flip side, right, people who read poetry or people who listen to poetry, what do you think draws them to it? You know, what resonates with people?
Yeah, and I think somewhere down there that's what a poem is, you know, that the first question that you asked me, what makes a poem? Mm. What makes a poem is completely subjective. It depends on the person who's reading it. And there is a high possibility, for example, for the longest time, I hated Shakespeare, you know, to the depth of my soul, and I hated it. And for a while, I was sort of wondering why I hated Shakespeare so much. And I think it's because of what I've been taught. You know, that there is a meaning hidden behind it, that this is the best form of poetry. And I couldn't relate to it. And I felt isolated from that experience of appreciating Shakespearean poetry. And only after, for quite a bit, suddenly I found myself having to perform it. And I'm like, yeah, I get it now. That is poetic, isn't it? Mm. So, yeah, I don't know what is appealing about poetry to others. Mm-hmm. But for me, it's just something that draws you in, that really reminds you that you are both, I know it sounds like poetry at the moment, but you are both flesh and bones and soul, and the writing, what you're reading is acknowledging that.
So, yeah. Hmm. I think it's interesting what you say about not liking Shakespeare, because that's, I think, what a lot of people are pointed to when when you talk about poetry, right? Those are like the classics.
Right.
But at the same time, you know, I guess it tells me that, you know, there's so many different forms of poetry. You don't have to like them all to like poetry. Yeah. It really depends on you as the individual, right? What resonates with you. And I guess from there, then I can already tell what your answer would be. Then there's no right or wrong way to appreciate poetry, right?
Yeah. I mean, how do people appreciate poetry? Some of us like to sit down in a dark corner somewhere in a room and just read it and just converse with the poem, while others prefer to watch it being performed live or watch it in a form, for example, a poetry film. So there, like you said, there are so many types of poems out there. And the way that you would experience it would be different as well.
Hmm. What do you think then makes poetry intimidating to some people?
For me, my thoughts are this. Number one, we've been taught since school that there is a fixed definition and a fixed idea of what poetry looks like.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And number two, we have to decipher the meaning. So this is a very sort of academic approach to poetry appreciation. And a lot of us, and I'm obviously speaking for myself too, that in the beginning you felt that you're not good enough to contribute to that discussion and also to produce writings of your own, because you always feel like, oh, I can never write like that. Yeah, that what is the meaning of my own writing? And you just stopped halfway and you just back off and go like, okay, the poetry is only for poets, but that's not the case.
I can definitely relate to that. I think for many Malaysians, myself included, your first exposure of poetry would have been in school, right? When you had BM classes, when you had English classes. Mm-hmm. And then back then it's like, okay, you're taught what are the quote unquote right answers for an exam. And then there's not much there's rarely room for discussion, I think, on what it means to you, which what I'm slowly discovering is what poetry should be about. You know, it should be just me figuring it out, what it means to me. It doesn't have to be, you know, it can be very different from what I guess the author intended it to be, right?
Yeah, exactly, right? And most of the poems that we read when we were younger or when we were in school, most of the poets are dead. And I feel that, you know, it really sort of distanced us from this idea that whatever that is being caught in that poem, it is timeless, as opposed to it has to be a reflection of the poet.
All right. Yeah. Let's go for a quick break now, Sheena. And when we come back, you know, I want to talk more about the poetry scene in Malaysia, as well as what you've seen change over the years, including before and after the pandemic. I'm speaking today to poet educator Sheena Baharudin in conjunction with World Poetry Day. And we're discussing all things poetry here on Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture with me, Lim Soo Ann. Joining me today, my guest is Sheena Baharudin, poet educator, and we are discussing all things poetry in conjunction with World Poetry Day, which was celebrated yesterday on the 21st of March. Now, before the break, we got into Sheena and I talked about what makes a poem, how there's really no right or wrong way to appreciate a poem, to even write a poem. And I think that's really what's important here. It's not about, you know, what the right answer is to the meaning behind a poem. You know, there are poems that are timeless, like you said, Sheena. So then let's talk about poetry here in Malaysia, right? What do you think makes poetry in Malaysia or local poets stand out? And how would you describe what the scene is like here in Malaysia?
Okay. So to give a little bit of context, right? Before I started performing poetry in 2008, 2009, before that, my exposure to poetry, I've always been written poetry. And it took me quite a while. You know, I had to be a student of English language and literature in order for me to realize that there are poems that are written by Malaysians. And it was definitely quite an experience because finally you felt represented, right? Because whenever you think about poems, you know, it's always the classics, always the classics. And you couldn't really relate to that. However, once I started performing my poetry, I think that was when I got to meet other people who also write poetry for the page or for the stage or for both. And what I believe is that one thing that sets Malaysian poetry apart from the rest is this sort of insistence, right? And I say it in the best way possible. There is no negativity attached to it. There is this insistence to write in multiple languages. And that sort of trait has somewhat met resistance over the years. And that is also connected to our own history in Malaysia with the National Language Act in 1963, 1967, right? Where you have to write in a specific language in order to be acknowledged as a Malaysian poet. But that sort of rebellious streak is one that I feel is the advantage, is the one thing that sets us apart.
I think it's really interesting to read these to read poetry or to hear poetry in different languages, because there are all these nuances that I guess you would pick up as a Malaysian, right? When you know the culture, when you know the context. But do you think that then only that makes the poetry only resonate with Malaysians and not people who would not understand, say, both BM and English, for example?
Right. Okay. So again, my take on this is this, right? And I had this conversation, this discussion with my students as well, where when we read British poems, when we read poems written by British poets and American poets and from the other countries as well, there was no such thing of when we read it, we go like, is this meant for me? You know, right? What is this word? I don't know what this word is. And what is the sort of response that we get out of that? I don't think that poets, especially from the UK, when they write, they think about, oh, okay, we are only writing in this language and it's going to sort of restrict our reading audience, right? However, in Malaysia, I feel that has been a concern, which of course raises the question then, who are we writing for? Right? Because if it's Malaysian poets, we are writing for Malaysians first, and those who don't have access to that language, then you can go to the next level of sort of you know, not dissecting it, exploring what it means, because it really reveals a lot about Malaysian culture. It should not be, I feel, a big concern. I think number one is that we have to encourage more people, more Malaysian youth especially, to write instead of just consuming it passively.
What's preventing Malaysian youths from writing? What have you seen? Or what have you heard?
I think that people have been writing, but it's in terms of the platforms where they share their poems.
Mm-hmm.
And again, this is something that is connected with the idea of, I guess, you know, what do you need to do in order to be acknowledged as a poet, right? Most of the time we'll go through that traditional route of publishing your work. You need to be published first.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's some sort of value to what you write. But if you were to look at social media nowadays, and even on websites and blogs, people have been writing. It's whether or not we are aware of their writing in the first place.
So let's talk about social media, right? Now, I think it's undeniable that social media, the internet, has made poetry a lot more accessible. You can put up your own writing. You can access other people's writings from other countries, from other languages, you know, translations and things like that. But it's also given rise to what many have termed Instagram poetry or Insta poets. Now, I know that's quite a divisive subject. There are people who are for it. There are people who absolutely hate it. But what do you make of it? You know, has that helped or hurt poetry? Is that a difficult question? Is there no like clear answer?
It's not a difficult question. And the reason why is because I feel that it has been this cycle. You know, everything, you know, what goes around comes around. The fact that when, let's just say what you said earlier, Suran, that this can be a divisive subject to talk about. But poetry itself, you know, is a divisive subject, you know, right? And it's not that innovations of the form hasn't been introduced prior to this, right? Because you have visual poetry, poetry films, and all of that. I think innovation is part of poetry because it's creativity. So for me, I must say that when I first started in just sort of being aware that poets like Ruby Kaur and Lang Leave, you know, they're gaining traction, this crazy popularity, there was a part of me that went like, but that's not poetry. I did say that. I must admit, I confess, right? And I was trying to figure out why do I feel and how and why do I respond in such a way? And I think it's because there is always I wouldn't say an inclination, but sometimes there tends to be only one idea of what a poem should be. And nowadays, when you look at Insta poetry, I wouldn't be surprised if you realize they all sound the same. Yeah, and there is this comfort of doing what you're good at, whereas when it comes to poetry, it's more of just pushing you into a state of discomfort. So I feel when it comes to Insta poetry, that is a great innovation. And it's also a great platform because of the readership, right? A lot of us are online right now. So strategically, it works. But again, it limits our understanding of what it is.
Why do you think it appeals to people then? I guess this new form of poetry.
Yeah. Well, again, because I've thought a lot about this. And I myself, you know, I share my works on my Instagram. So for me, it's because it's palatable, because it's short, digestible as well. So quite a lot of time, it's just sort of surface. It works on a surface level. You know, you feel about it, you react to it, and then you're done. And that is something that takes away what poetry has been doing for a long time. It really forced you to think, you know, force you to be aware of certain issues that you're experiencing, you know, regardless of who you are and where you are. So I guess there are both pros and cons to it.
And I guess considering that these kinds of poetry on social media, like you said, tends to be a bit more surface level, tend to be very short. I think that's definitely a very clear pattern among them. Does poetry need to then address serious issues, heavier issues, to resonate with people?
Right. I believe so. I believe so. I mean, for those who are maybe, you know, this is the first time you're sort of exploring poetry writing, exploring poetry, it's a good start, right? Mm-hmm. But that shouldn't be the end game. There are many other types of poems out there. So for me, yes, I am definitely somebody who believes that poetry, or basically those who produce poems, need to address the more serious issues. Because that's where, like I mentioned earlier, language tends to fail us. In the face of trauma, in the face of, you know, certain sort of experiences and events that we have never experienced before, where language fails us, that's when poetry steps in. And obviously, that's where art steps in.
So then if we look at the situation we're in, you know, we spent the past 2 years stuck in a pandemic, sometimes stuck in a loop almost. There were articles and, you know, pieces written, I think, earlier on in the pandemic, with people saying that, oh, you're seeing a lot more people turn to poetry because of, you know, where we're finding ourselves in. Did you see that? Did you see more people turning to poetry?
Yes, I definitely see that. And like you mentioned about, you know, where the doctors, you know, they submitted pantones, or they talk about, you know, they write pantones. Mm,
that was earlier on in the pandemic, yeah, which was quite
exactly.
smart.
Earlier on, and there were quite a number of competitions that were being held during the pandemic itself, because we couldn't leave the house, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we were in a space where suddenly we have to sort of sit down and try to go inwards instead of outwards. And I think that works really well in terms of poetry writing. Just to let you know that recently we had the Malaysian National Poetry Writing Competition.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And we received up to 10,000 submissions. And wow. This is, you know, organized by the University of Nottingham School of English. So clearly people are writing, and they just wanted an avenue to share that. And because the pandemic is a collective experience, right? It was not surprising at all. It was just more, what is surprising is the volume of people wanting to share it.
Hmm. So it's a matter of giving people that opportunity, right? And to, for them to not be shy about sharing right. what they've written.
Yeah. And it's less intimidating than performing your poetry, right?
Mm. Yeah, because you don't have to put yourself out there on the stage.
Exactly.
So then, speaking of performing, then how has the pandemic also affected the ability of poets, of spoken word poets, to perform? Because that's a very different form of poetry than written poetry.
Yeah, for sure. So what I can see and what I've seen is that the spoken word poetry scene or performance scene has definitely been affected.
Mm-hmm.
Because one of the reasons why people actually go out, you know, leave the house and watch, you know, somebody perform, a complete stranger perform their poem on stage, is because of that sense of community, right? It's something that you can't really experience by just reading a poem, for example. And I feel that, And obviously it's something that you can definitely see, is that over the past 2 years or so, the number of events have gone down closely to zero. Mm-hmm. And there have been multiple efforts to sort of recreate that feel online, you know, on Instagram, on you know, whatever, like on Zoom. But there's something still missing. And I think that we're still figuring it out. But what I feel that is important for me to sort of highlight and sort of note it down for myself is we tend to rely on things that makes us very comfortable. I think we were very comfortable already with the same way of performing, that you need to figure out how do we sort of find that middle point between traditional, you know, printed poetry as with the spoken word stage performance. And I do feel that social media is the way to do it.
For yourself personally, I guess, what do you struggle, what do you like or dislike about performing via social media?
Okay, so what I like about it is that, number one, there's more things that I can experiment with, you know, mm-hmm. moving pictures, font, you know, everything, all of that. I really like playing with it. What I dislike about it, to a certain extent, is being in the moment,
mm-hmm.
being able to see people's expressions and to sort of, you know, look at them in the eyes and go like, I see you and you see me, and just enjoy this poem. I can't have that online.
The screen is such a huge barrier, isn't it?
For sure. It is a huge barrier, and it's very different. Like I've done this performance where it's on Zoom and everybody turned on their cameras, right? Mm-hmm. But it still doesn't have that same feel because I could be looking at this one person, but this person doesn't know that I'm looking at them. You know, so there's still this distance. This distance.
Mm. Do you think we've done enough to foster appreciation for local poetry here in Malaysia? And I'm thinking of both, you know, English poetry as well as Malay poetry, right? The more traditional forms of poetry as well. Have we done enough to foster that appreciation, that interest in our own poetry?
What is enough, though? I feel that over the past decade, we've had many sort of events, many books that have been published to foster a little bit more, to foster poetry appreciation. But as an educator, this is where I truly believe that sort of boils down back to educating people about poetry. Mm-hmm. And a lot of time, our conception of poetry comes from what we've learned in school. So if we want to really seriously address this and to foster whatever we want to foster with the arts, it has to start from school. And what can we do with it? Well, number one, perhaps we can train the educators in terms of arts education, or really to infiltrate the education system and plant all of these practitioners in the first place. Yeah, and that's not a radical idea. It's been done in the UK, it's been done in the States. You know, there have been efforts to introduce that in Malaysia through my poetry school, but it just hasn't really, you know, like, we need more support for that to happen.
Yeah. For students to hear directly from poets themselves, right?
Exactly. And to know that, you know, they're not 92 years old white writer.
Which is unfortunately what we are often first exposed to. And to touch on that a bit, right? What do you think younger writers are bringing to the table as well?
Their voices. You're bringing it to the surface. They are also, like, quite a number of the younger poets that I've had the privilege of reading or watching, is that they are really talking about the experience of being Malaysian in the 21st century. And we don't have enough of that if we were to look at published poems that we have now.
So before we end, Sheena, would you have, I guess, recommendations for people to check out, you know, any favorite poems or poets that people can, you know, do a quick Google search for if they are interested in poetry but they just don't know where to start?
Okay, so I guess if you the best place to start, you know, if you need a little bit of guidance right there, we have the anthology of Malaysian poetry that was recently published, I think 2 years back, if I'm not mistaken. It's called the Malchin Testament. It was published by Maya Press. And it really, you know, everything in there from pre-Merdeka, pre-independence, up to the 21st century, the spoken word poets. So it's just like a buffet of introductory poems and poets for you to explore a bit further.
And would you have a final message for our listeners about poetry?
Don't be scared. You know, don't be scared. There is a poet inside of us somewhere, inside of you somewhere. You just need to let them breathe. So go ahead and do it.
And on that note, thank you so much for joining me today, Sheena.
Thank you. Thank you, Suan.
I've been speaking to poet educator Sheena Bahruddin about all things poetry in conjunction with World Poetry Day, which was observed yesterday. If you missed any part of today's show or any previous Live and Learn episodes, you can download the podcast on bfm.my or on the BFM app. You've been listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture with me, Lim Suan, and I'll leave you now with Sheena reading one of her own poems titled Padi.
Padi. Ada hari, ada nasi. Asal hidup, cari rezeki, kata si tuan tanah dari ruang redup balkoni, kepada buruh tani melilih keringat di dahi, berhempas pulas, diam dikikis, pedih matahari.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.